It's the Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. This week, following the primary, we've had some more clarity around who will be running in the November elections. We've also seen movement in the state legislature on gun control and heard from Governor Shapiro about his priorities for mental health. We'll be talking about these issues and more on our politics roundtable on the Confluence. And we're joined by Stephen Caruso, Capitol reporter for Spotlight PA. Stephen, good to have you with us again.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Good morning, John Micek. John is the editor-in-chief for Pennsylvania Capital Star.
Thanks, good morning. Nice to be here.
And Chris Potter, WESA's Government Accountability Editor. Welcome back, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start with gun control. There was a four-bill package. Two bills passed the Pennsylvania House, now face a GOP-led Senate. One barely was defeated, and the other wasn't brought up for a vote. Two Republicans joined Democrats in passing what's known as the red flag bill. What would that do? Stephen, first you.
Basically, what this does is give law enforcement or family members an ability to petition a court and say, hey, this loved one or this person has been acting unusual. They maybe expressed no interest in guns, but they went out and purchased a gun, or they've been making violent threats, and where there's a concern that they're a threat to themselves or others. And then the court can take away their guns for a brief period. And then that's adjudicated in court to try and figure out, you know, is this person about to commit suicide? Is this person about to go commit a mass shooting? A bunch of other states have them, including some red and blue states. So it's something that gun violence reduction advocates have been advocating for a long time to try and just, you know, reduce both gun suicides, which are one of the biggest causes of death using firearms, and also, you know, mass shootings.
John, any surprise to you, either the slim margin of passage or that it was passed at all?
Well, you know, this is something, Kevin, that gun violence reduction advocates have sought for a long time. They looked to the new House, however slender it is, the new House Democratic majority to get this done for them. Representative Frank Burns, Democrat from Cambria County, ended up playing the spoiler here, casting no votes on some of these measures. They two of them squeaked through, including this. Including this red flag bill sponsored by Representative Jennifer O'Mara, a Democrat out of Delaware County, who herself was touched by firearms suicide some years ago when her father died from suicide when she was 13. She said on the House floor that she knows that in the 19 states where this was passed, it had been proven to lower suicide rates. Its fate, obviously, in the Republican-controlled Senate is far from assured, but Democrats and their allies are at least looking at this day in the House as a victory.
Stephen, I understand that this red flag measure wasn't likely to even get out of committee if the former chair, a Republican, still led that panel. Is that correct?
Yeah, Representative Rob Kaufman used to be chair of Judiciary Committee. I think very almost famously, at least in these circles, said, as long as Rob Kaufman is Chairman Kaufman, this is not going to advance. So this is an example, I think, of something where, you know, Democrats were trying to say, we have a majority, this is what we're going to do with it. I think also ERPO law, red flag laws, in particular for Republicans and gun rights advocates, is like really a scary thing for them because, you know, a court says you can't have a gun, and that's like their biggest fear when it comes to gun rights.
The other bill passed 109-92 with several Republicans joining the Democratic majority, would close the gun show loophole. John, briefly explain what that loophole is.
So, I mean, this expands the background checks under law to include private purchases of long guns. This is something that is a so-called gun show loophole where people, they go to gun shows, they can walk out of there, not necessarily, you know, being legally qualified to own a firearm. This is one of the things where, you know, the Democrats have sought to close this loophole. It's also an issue that polls really well, Kevin. Even if you ask gun owners, they say it makes perfect sense for people who ought not to have firearms to not have access to them.
Mm-hmm. The language is about long guns. Does this include AR-15s, which, let's face it, are commonly used in mass shootings? Stephen?
Yes. So, right now, basically the way background checks work, if you buy from a federally licensed firearm dealer, you're going to get background checked. Pennsylvania also has its own background checks that only apply to pistol sales. And what this would do is expand it to long guns, which is basically just a term about barrel length from an old 1930s gun control law. And right now, if you bought a certain type of AR-15 that had like a short enough barrel, it would be background checked under Pennsylvania and federal laws if you did from a licensed seller. But because of the way just because of that, like, kind of the, all the ways you can make guns, this would apply it to all sales of long guns as well. The state background check system.
Right. A third measure that failed by one vote is meant to block illegally obtained guns, the so-called straw purchases. The bill would have required firearm owners to report their guns as lost or stolen to law enforcement within 3 days. Chris, let me bring you in here. Pittsburgh passed a straw purchase law a while back. Remind us about that and whatever happened to it.
Yeah, well, not much happened with it, honestly. The point of these straw purchase laws is that very often people buy guns on behalf of somebody else who is barred legally from purchasing the guns themselves. And when the police try to chase the gun back, it gets used in a crime. The person who actually purchased the weapon and handed it over says, oh, I lost it, or, you know, it was stolen, and da 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 da. And the idea is that you're trying to set up a regimen in which people have to report if their guns have been lost or stolen. This thing the city of Pittsburgh tried to do on its own, but was concerned about being sued, and for good reason, and so never really enforced the rule. The city's passed other bills as well, efforts to prevent the sale of AR-15 style weapons and large capacity magazines. They were sued by gun rights activists over that, and lost. These issues go back 25, 30 years for Pittsburgh. There was an effort to regulate assault rifles in the mid-1990s, and they lost. And sort of consent decree that was entered there still kind of haunts the city today. So it really reflects the frustration here. I'll note, too, as John said, that Frank Burns, who's a legislator from the Johnstown area, was essentially the vote that killed that. He was the one person in the House who broke party ranks to vote against that lost and stolen requirement. And a lot of Democrats have been saying for a long time that he is, you know, potentially the most powerful person in the House, sort of the Joe Manchin of the state House, because he is sort of a kind of an old school Democrat of the type we had out here in Western Pennsylvania a lot, skews conservative on social issues. And really does have the potential to be a spoiler on votes like this. And so you just saw that play out on that particular vote, because it was a one vote margin and he was the guy who broke party ranks. So this is the kind of reason why you have local governments undertaking what are very popular reforms, as was mentioned before, and trying to do it on their own, but basically being thwarted by the state and the fact that the state reserves to itself the ability to legislate where guns are concerned.
Briefly, Stephen.
What I'd say is I think Democrats were kind of banking on getting some Republican crossover support to get some of these bills through. We saw that on the two that passed, the red flag law and the universal background check law, lost and stolen for whatever reason. Just they didn't get it. And then because Burns voted against all of them. And I think Democrats went to the vote expecting that. It was just they didn't get any Republican support.
And John.
Yeah, just to amplify what Chris was saying, you know, this is one of those instances where Republicans are in favor of local control and, until they're not, and they come in and sort of preempt these local efforts to regulate, to offer stricter gun regulations. Philadelphia went through the same thing. Harrisburg went through the same thing because the legislature simply was not acting, but now we have sort of this action in the House.
It's our State Politics Roundtable on the Confluence. We're talking with John Micek, editor-in-chief for Pennsylvania Capital Star, Stephen Caruso, Capital reporter for Spotlight PA, and Chris Potter, WESA's government and accountability editor. Last week, the state's reorganized Basic Education Funding Commission met for the first time. Stephen, this commission isn't new. Remind us of its background briefly.
So this commission was started back in 2015. That was the first time it met. They developed a new fair funding formula that's been used to route all new money spent on basic education since then. So we're talking like a couple billion out of the, I think, like 12 billion or so we spend on public education in Pennsylvania, at least at the state level. And it's meant to go out to poorer districts, the districts that are struggling, versus just a mostly population-based equation that is used for most of the funding that is weighted heavily towards smaller districts or districts that have shrunk in the last like 30 years.
Right. The commission is co-chaired by Representative Mike Sterla, a Democrat from Lancaster, and Senator Kristen Phillips Hill, Republican from York. In February, a judge ruled that the state's funding system violates the Pennsylvania Constitution. We've been watching that legal battle for years and years. So will this new commission take on the task of making ed funding more equitable, John?
I would imagine so. I mean, this is sort of an ongoing conversation here. It's something that Governor Shapiro highlighted during his budget address in March. It's an ongoing part of the budget discussions that we're going through right now.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, timeline for their work and what is their charge? Do they make recommendations to the legislature as a whole? What?
Yeah, they basically just make recommendations. Statutorily, they have to dissolve at the end of the year, by the way the commission law was written. You know, I think Shapiro brought them together to try and just restart the conversation, be a starting point on how can we actually fix our education system as charged by the Commonwealth Court. You know, I don't think all of the conversations around what's going to happen next is going to be in this commission, but I think it's going to just sort of be the, like, I don't know, it's like an old standard in politics. You make a blue ribbon commission, you have them give a bunch of recommendations, you start from there, and then you see where the conversation goes with this starting point of, we have a bipartisan report. Hopefully we can come up with something.
Let me clarify something, Stephen. You said they dissolve by the end of the year. Is that correct?
Yes, and they can extend themselves if they want, if they have agreement. And I think that's probably going to happen, but, you know, we'll see.
Because I was going to say, do they expect to have a legislative proposal at least by the end of the year?
I don't think so, no.
John, you're saying no as well.
No, I mean, there are tables propped up all over the Capitol with the reports of blue ribbon commissions, Kevin. But, I mean, this one seems more serious than most.
Okay. A 2021 state survey of young people found that more than 40% of Pennsylvania students reported symptoms of depression. Shapiro's budget includes $500 million over the next 5 years so schools can fund mental health counselors and services. He was at Hempfield Area High School in Westmoreland County last week, and he noted that mental health concerns were a factor in three-fourths of the reports that were made through an app meant to prevent violence among young people.
And that should tell us all we need to know about the fact that students need more assistance. It may mean partnering with behavioral health providers to offer the students services they need to best meet their needs.
Has there been much reaction in the legislature to this particular item in the education budget, or even how to help schools provide services? John?
You know, Kevin, I think we can understate overstate the importance of this issue legislatively. This is something that the county governments flagged as their number one priority for this budget cycle for this year. Earlier in the week, the House Human Services Committee voted unanimously on the allocation of $100 million in one-time federal money for a raft of mental health services. That legislation sponsored by Representative Michael Schlossberg, a Democrat from Lehigh County, who's probably one of the foremost advocates in the legislature for this issue and who has spoken publicly and I think written also a whole book about his own mental health travail. So we've seen this issue centered in a way this year that we've not really seen it centered previously. Counties are pushing for what's known as an increase in the base funding for mental health. You know, they have a set amount and then they sort of get money on top of that. The base, though, is really key for them. George Hartwick, a Democratic County Commissioner from Dauphin County, who chairs the Human Services Panel for the County Commissioners Association, has really been an advocate for that money as well.
Mm-hmm. Stephen.
Yeah, and I think what's really important to point out, too, is that the, like, a lot of the money for mental health is already there. Like, the state in the last year's budget said, we're going to set aside about $100 million to spend on this, but lawmakers just kind of punted on building the plan. So that's what we're kind of waiting on, is like, what is the plan going to be? And I think that has also caused some advocates to be like, you know, what is the wait? Like, you know, there are mental health needs now. We literally said we're going to put money to it, but lawmakers just haven't gotten to actually advance like that. So I think Shapiro is just trying to take advantage of the fact the money's on the table.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, politically speaking, I think, you know, we were just talking about the gun issue and the Republican response very often to efforts to limit gun usage. These are mental health issues. So I think politically, it's very difficult in this time with the school shootings that we've seen across the country, with this debate going on, to say no to this stuff. And generally, what I've sort of seen from Republicans locally and elsewhere is, you know, oh, this is money we've talked about supporting, kind of to Steve's point as well. This is fine. You know, Josh Shapiro is supporting something that we've been talking about for some period of time now. So I wouldn't expect this to be certainly as contentious as the gun issue itself, in part because it's a way of getting around that discussion with what is, after all, still a very serious and real issue in the schools and outside of them as well.
Let's turn to election campaigns. Chris, here in Allegheny County, Stephen Cipolla might not be done after 25 years as district attorney, even though he lost to Matt Dugan in the Democratic primary. Why might there be a rematch?
Yeah, you can't keep a good man down. That's why. I think a lot of us expected this to happen. There was a write-in effort simultaneously. Mr. Cipolla, of course, is a Democrat and has been for his career. But there was a write-in effort taking place simultaneously on the Republican side, encouraged by Republican leaders who basically are very uncomfortable with Matt Dugan, who's sort of running on a criminal justice reform and did pretty well with it on the Democratic side. But Mr. Cipolla got something like 6,000 votes. He really only needed 500 and to be the top vote getter. And so he cleared that bar easily. He will now be offered, the county will say to him, you can be the nominee if you want. He has to formally accept that. His campaign hasn't definitively said that, but Mr. Zappala's remarks on election night when he conceded the Democratic primary and his campaign since then have suggested pretty strongly that we will be seeing him again this fall.
So, Chris, briefly, I mean, I remember when Arlen Specter switched parties from Republican to Democrat, although he was a fairly liberal Republican throughout his career. But still, if Stephen Cipolla does that, does this really kill his ties with the Democrats?
Yeah, but I mean, you got to figure that, you know, one way or the other, if he doesn't win this race, I don't expect to see him back in politics. I mean, part of why we got the result that we got this May is that Steve Cipolla doesn't like to campaign very much. And I think that would be a challenge for him as well going into the fall. He's going to have to make a case to Republicans for why he should be their guy when they're used to thinking of him as a Democrat and without losing sort of independent, more moderate voters. So that's a tough needle to thread. And you have to work at it. And, you know, we'll see if he's more invested in that campaign than he was certainly in the spring.
All right. After losing last year's gubernatorial race, Doug Mastriano was reportedly considering a run for Senate despite opposition from his own party. But it appears that he has for now decided not to run for the U.S. Senate and to challenge Senator Bob Casey after releasing a statement last night. I want to get reaction from each of you. First, John.
Yeah, I think it was sort of interesting that during that event last night, Mastriano said he's not running for now. And should things change, you know, if the heavens align, you know, maybe I got to be the guy who steps in. I mean, so he kind of left the door open. But I mean, bumped in the general election by Josh Shapiro last year, Republicans look at him as damaged goods. Russ Diamond, Republican from Lebanon County, jumping on Twitter this week, appealing for his fellow Republicans to not support his candidacy. So, I mean, I think Mastriano is at least smart enough to look at the writing on the wall there, but also smart enough to keep his options open. This race is wide open right now. It looks like David McCormick, the guy who ran and lost for the GOP nomination in 2022, is the only candidate standing. But I guess we'll see who else, if anyone, you know, maybe emerges.
Correct me if I'm wrong, John. Russ Diamond, a Republican, also, I think, supported Josh Shapiro in the gubernatorial campaign over Mastriano. Is that correct?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. So Stephen, let me get to your reaction to Mastriano's sort of decision.
Yeah, I don't know about supporting Josh Shapiro, but what we can definitely say is that Russ Diamond came from a similar part of politics as Doug Mastriano, a grassroots conservative who spent a lot of time opposing Tom Wolf's COVID mediation measures. Spent some time talking about the specter of a fraudulent election. I think he tried to use different wordage, but like he touched on some of the same themes as Mastriano, but he still even came out and said, like, you know, Mastriano, please don't run again. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, that's telling, which is just overall Republicans, they need to flip this. This is like one of their top targets, Pennsylvania's seat under Bob Casey. They don't need a really good candidate because Bob Casey is an institution. The Casey name is an institution. So I think they're just keeping that in mind.
And briefly, Chris, your take on Mastriano's decision for now.
I mean, two groups of people really disappointed by it. One were hardcore Mastriano supporters, and the other were Democrats. I think a lot of Democrats would have loved to have seen him jump into this race. Even if he doesn't become the nominee, he bleeds, you know, whether it's Mr. McCormick or somebody else, you know, makes them work for it in the primary, which is something that Mr. McCormick indicated he wasn't that willing to do. It doesn't mean there won't be a primary. As John said, we might see Stacey Garrity, the state treasurer, jump into that race. But, you know, I mean, I think if you watched it, it took him 20 minutes to get to actually expressing like what his opinions are going to be. And that's the kind of thing Democrats are really going to miss next year, is sort of eccentric, long rambling performances by Doug Mastriano, sort of serving to divide the GOP. And it seems, at least for now, like that's not going to happen.
Finally, 20 seconds for each of you. Past primary season, but is election season ever over? The budget needs to be passed by July 1st. To each of you, what are you going to be looking at in the days to come, whether it's the budget or something else in our state government and politics? John, briefly.
The House is back first week of June. We'll be looking for what they're doing. There were some committee votes just this last week with bills they advanced. We'll see those come to floor votes. And again, we'll just be keeping tabs on budget negotiations.
One particular bill that stands out to you that they'll be looking at?
I wrote about this morning, a community revitalization bill sponsored by Bert Mirsky, yes, Democrat out of Erie, that would provide some money for communities to fight blight and for communities to team up to fight blight. That's a big deal for cities like Erie and Pittsburgh and Johnstown that are contending with this kind of stuff.
20 seconds, Stephen Caruso, what are you looking for in the days and weeks ahead?
So outside the budget, obviously big numbers, just all the other legislation that will move as part of side deals to get stuff done. Fairness Act, safe injection site ban. There's a rail safety bill that looks posed to pass the House pretty soon in response to East Palestine. So who knows what actually gets to Josh Spear's desk, but I'm expecting a really busy season.
And finally, Chris Potter.
Yeah, I don't have too much budget stuff to worry about, happily. But we will have general election campaigns, perhaps in the district attorney's office. Also for county executive, might be a little more spirited than we're used to seeing here in Allegheny County this year. So looking at that, and too, just sort of emerging issues with homelessness in consultation with my other reporters, crime and other issues of governance here in Western Pennsylvania.
We've been speaking with Chris Potter, WESA's Government and Accountability Editor, John Micek, Editor-in-Chief for Pennsylvania Capital Star, and Stephen Caruso, Capital Reporter for Spotlight PA. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And for today, that is The Confluence. Thanks to our team, Emma Furry, Addison Deal, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.